Well, his name's Greenpeace, Les. And he's pink. So don't look at him and tell me he's pink, because I already told you he's pink, okay? I accidentally spray painted him. There he is.
Ooh. He's pink. Hi there, Greenpeace. You look like a cute little froggy. Doesn't move around much.
He's a very sick frog, Les.
Oh, I see. What shall we do?
I don't want to hear it, Les.
Why?
It's bad luck to take advice from insane people.
Hey, Herb. Mr. Carlson wants me to find out why you're throwing coffee pots around the lobby this morning.
I have a sick frog on my hands, Andy.
Oh, well, that explains it.
You want to see him?
Hey, why not?
Well, he's pink, Andy. So don't look at him and tell me he's pink, because I've already told you he's pink, okay? I accidentally spray-painted him. There he is.
What's his name?
Greenpeace.
Looks like Pink
Pete. Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
You can read about it tomorrow, or possibly see it tonight. But with radio, you get it now and again.
I like to roll up my sleeves and, you know, get involved.
Mr. President, did you by any chance take your back pills?
Well, I don't mind telling you, CJ, I was in a little pain there.
Which did you take, sir, the Vicodin or the Percocet?
I wasn't supposed to take them both.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality. The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Story of my life right there. Story of my life.
The Percocet and the Vicodin.
You know, who says two great tastes that taste great together?
It's like chocolate and peanut butter. Hey, it's the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show. Bob Seska here.
Chez Pazienza here.
We're back from an extended holiday break. We really had like what? It seems like maybe a month off. I think it was like 2 weeks, but it seems.
And everything's different now.
Yeah.
Are you out of your old apartment?
Yeah. We're in a new place now.
Excellent. And I'm in LA, so.
See, we only do an hour a week, and we needed to for some reason take a break from that. that was just too strenuous. So, you know what? Oh, God. The grind of doing an hour a week.
That hour really cuts into my Vicodin and Percocet time.
But, you know, we come back and we enter into 2012. I'm still saying 2011 on the show.
You'll be doing that for a month and a half.
we dive into 2012 with big news on the show. This weekend, this Sunday, from 3 to 4, and if you're listening live on the radio right now, this projection forward is going to seem really anachronistic. But we're premiering on WPWC 1480 AM We Act Radio in Washington, D.C. Our first terrestrial radio affiliate.
It's the first step toward terrestrial radio domination.
That's right.
It's only a matter of time.
And so we're going to be on every Sunday from 3 to 4 in the afternoon. So if you're watching football, you're probably not going to listen to the show. But if you're not watching football, in fact, here's what you do. You turn down the sound on the football game and turn up your radio if you're listening in the Washington, D.C. market.
Because that won't be surreal.
That won't be too confusing. We'll be talking about Newt Gingrich and you'll be watching, you know, the Giants dominate the playoffs. But you can also listen live on weactradio.com. It's a brand new radio station. They launched right after the new year. It's a progressive, all progressive talk radio station in Washington, D.C. And it's I've been sort of looking at the lineup and going, you know what, this is like a progressive superstation. In fact, you know what, I'll probably be calling it the progressive superstation. Washington, D.C.
It's the progressive hall of justice.
It's the progressive hall of justice. I mean, the lineup is pretty massive. It's got Bill Press, Stephanie Miller, Tom Hartman, Ed Schultz, Sam Cedar, Shannon Moore, Nicole Sandler, David Schuster is doing a show. It's got Ring of Fire, Nancy Skinner, and then one of the new shows that they're launching on We Act Radio, WPWC 1480 AM, Liz Winstead's teaming up with Cliff Schechter to do a show.
That's great. That should be incredibly entertaining.
Should be fantastic. And then us. We're going to be on the Bubble Genius Bob and Chess show, 3 to 4 p.m.
And then there's us.
And then there's us. You know, they can't be superstation all throughout their lineup. That's gotta right.
We are the Wonder Twins of that particular Justice League.
I don't know which one of us is Gleek. Space Monkey Gleek. It's really exciting. And I grew up in Washington, D.C., so I know all of the places there. I can occasionally drop in some regional references like the Beltway.
Oh, no, you can't. Come on, you can't go hyper-local.
I'm not.
That'd be so cheesy.
It really would. Suddenly I'm starting to talk about Fuddruckers and Fairfax.
All of you facing traffic out there on the Beltway.
Yeah, no traffic reports.
You hear the program director just, yeah, love it. More local. They love that.
Well, that'll be easy because all you have to do traffic for Washington, D.C. is say, you know what? There's just traffic everywhere. Traffic
just get out of your car and walk.
On the Wilson Bridge, always traffic. Always traffic all around the Beltway. And especially down in that mixing bowl down there near Springfield Mall. If you're down in that area, you're in traffic. It doesn't matter what time of day, there's traffic down there.
See, I can do that too now because I'm in L.A. where it takes, 45 minutes to get three blocks.
Yeah, right. God. Yeah, I know. That's the thing about L.A. It's like, I used to live in eastern Pennsylvania. So why the hell did you live there? But you know what? It took me as long to get from where I lived in eastern Pennsylvania to Manhattan as it would take to get from, in L.A., to get from
Pasadena to Santa Monica.
Yeah, like the valley to West right. Hollywood.
You know what, though? You sit with this, honestly, I know it's been said over and over, but you sit with the sunroof open and the windows down, and it's January, and it's freaking 75 degrees and sunny out, and that is pretty nice. Yeah. No arguing with that.
Oh, I know. I know it, sir. But you know what? The show, the actual podcast, is not going to be really all that different. The only difference that you're going to hear in the podcast version of the show is we're going to be breaking the show up into segments. So this way, the people at WPWC 1480 AM, the progressive superstation in Washington, D.C., will be able to insert commercials into the show. The Bubble Genius commercial will still be here, two of them, in fact. But they're going to have to add commercials for the terrestrial radio station. And those will be at irregular increments. I would try attention WPWC board operators. I'm gonna try my best.
attention board ops, your job sucks.
You're screwed.
There's just no way around it.
That's right.
How much money are you making? What, like $3 an hour?
Yeah. Unless they're unpaid interns, which right. a lot of times they are. And so what's going to happen is the show is going to be broken up, and because we've been used to speaking extemporaneously for an hour, hour and a half, without any breaks except for the couple of Bubble Genius breaks, and we don't even really shut up during those either. So this is going to we're going to have to employ some discipline here on the radio.
Yeah, because I'm really well known for that.
Maybe we'll.
I want to be the next Larry King. That's why I'm already on my way with wives. So the next thing I got to do is take garlic and start asking really ridiculous questions.
Paint your bald spot.
Right. What happened to the food?
What happened to the groceries?
Right. What happened to the groceries?
So there you go.
That never gets old. Never gets old.
Never gets old. Pressure under fire. Done this before. I don't want to be his first surgery. Plied himself well. These are the things I have confidence in, young MD. But I'm talking about journalism. I'm talking about journalism school, Larry. What? I don't follow you. So, normally this show is almost entirely politics. We talk about progressive politics here. We talk about the presidential campaigns. We talk about presidential politics in general. We talk about the media. Chez is a former CNN and MSNBC producer.
I am.
So we get into that a lot.
Very former.
And occasionally we drop in with some, pop culture crap and all of that. And you know what? Next week, we're going to be, we're going to be launching the After Party show, which is going to be our subscription-only, membership-only show. And so that'll start. As I said, 2012 is going to be effing huge.
That's the one that we do naked. Yeah. That's really the only difference. We're still going to talk politics. We'll just, you can imagine us naked.
Naked, totally naked. Yeah. So yesterday,
with a martini.
Yesterday, I wrote something about Ron Paul, and that's that for the Huffington Post.
I saw that. It's like you insulted Scientology.
That's exactly right.
Because they came out of the freaking woodwork to kick your rear end, man.
You know, I've said before, and I said it in my Huffington Post column. I said that. You know, Ayn Rand is like the L. Ron Hubbard of politics. I'm beginning to think that Ron Paul is the L. Ron Hubbard of politics.
No, Ron Paul is the L. Ron Hubbard of politics. It's a bunch of nonsensical conspiracy theories, and his fans are just freaking rabid and coordinated to the point where, you know, as soon as you wrote that, dude, I read some of the, you know, I immediately, like, let me follow the comments. And they're all the same. I mean, they're all lunatic. They all don't – none of them listen to reason.
No.
No, they're not all lunatic, but most of them don't listen to reason. No. And it's such really shocking groupthink. You know, it's the same sort of things repeated over and over again to the point where you really think that, you know, I know it's funny. I know that Cenk Uygur got in trouble on Twitter while we were off for basically saying that people were coming down on him where, you know, it might have been coordinated by the Obama administration. Mm. But all of what Ron Paul supporters have to say, the way that they all sort of sound alike, and the fact that they all tend to just – they jump at the same time. I mean, it's almost like they're trolling, looking for – you know, they're Googling Paul's name and just, you know, okay, we're going to jump on that crap. It really does feel coordinated to me, but obviously not coordinated by the actual Paul campaign. You know, coordinated by, look, his people are just that freaking fanatical.
Yeah, I mean, it's only really coordinated insofar as they peruse the same discussion forums and the same blogs. And then someone says, oh, God, look at that guy over there. He's attacking, you know, cult leader Ron Paul. Let's go get him. And so then they do that. So it's not like Ron Paul sitting there going.
It's like they light the fire on top of the mountain in Lord of the Rings that brings like all the other kingdoms in to help.
It's not like Ron Paul like sends out a message that's, you know, a secret coded message that says something like,
ooh, hot cherry soda.
and then suddenly everyone like springs into action and attacks. That's not how it works. And that's not how it worked with the Cenk Uygur thing. I mean, that was just ridiculous.
No, of course. What he said was that was just dumb. But I really, you know, my stupid geek analogy, I think is kind of right. I think it's, you know, it's a viral thing, but it's like they're all sort of – all of his supporters seem to be sort of so in tune with each other that, yeah, as soon as it says something, it's just, you know, we got to go, you know, sharks. We got to go get them.
Yeah, that's right. And so everyone gathers together and they go and they use – you know what? I've noticed a couple of things. First of all, what they do very often, and this is just a strange, very trivial observation. When they're on the attack, you can kind of tell that they're exchanging notes because what they often do is capitalize proper nouns. So they're just like progressive suddenly gets a capital P and politicians gets a capital P. It's just like the weird little things that you see as part of the groupthink. But the main thing is that regardless of what point you're trying to make, their response is, but liberty. So you say, okay, Ron Paul is so interested in the Constitution that he doesn't care at all about the 14th Amendment and privacy rights with regards to abortion. He wants to criminalize abortion. He wants to arrest. He wants to allow the states to arrest abortion doctors because abortion, in his view, is murder. So you say you explain that and you provide details about 14th Amendment, Roe v. Wade, Supreme Court, so forth. Their response is, but liberty. And it's like, I saw a video on YouTube.
It's like that Seinfeld gag. The government just dropped the bottle on the ground.
I saw a YouTube video and a guy was like, you know, observing that Ron Paul supporters, it's like the word liberty is like the word abracadabra. it has no meaning. It's just a vacant response.
It's the aristocrats. Blah, 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 blah. Liberty.
Liberty. Yeah, that's right. It's like,
Ron Paul craps all over your rights and everything. Liberty.
So what's that meme? Like number one, elect Ron Paul. Number two, question mark, question mark, question mark. Number three, liberty.
Right. Yep, exactly. That's it. Exactly.
Yeah. But, you know, It's just I love tweaking those guys. And the other thing is
you can always tell who the people you can immediately ignore, because they're the ones who call Ron Paul Dr. Paul.
Dr.
Immediately.
Paul.
As soon as they say that, it's like the old Barnaby Jones, whenever the one guy who called Barnaby Pops, that was always the one who you knew was the bad guy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, if you call him Dr. Paul, if you sort of defer to his medical expertise in that manner, then yeah, then pretty much anything you have to say after that just goes right out the freaking window.
Yeah. And, you know, specifically, I was addressing progressive supporters of Ron Paul with this piece, but it didn't matter because then everyone comes out of the woodwork. Yeah, I was getting weird, really weird stuff on Twitter, like anti-Semitic David Duke type people who support Ron Paul. And then I was getting people who just were like, the victims of Hiroshima and Nagasaki deserved it because they attacked us. You know, just like really bizarre, fringy cult type stuff. And so, really, I made a valiant effort, I believe, to create a piece that was fact-based without getting too overly hyperbolic about Ron Paul, which I subsequently did on Twitter. But you know, the Huffington Post,
but
I
it's
really,
so easy.
Yeah, I mean, I really tried.
Ron Paul was a joke that writes itself.
That's exactly right. I tried to outline all of the areas where Ron Paul is anathema to progressivism. And there are a lot, you know, where you can say there's some overlap in foreign policy because of his libertarianism. But everything else is far right paleoconservative. The most conservative member of Congress between 1937 and 2002 is Ron Paul, based on his record.
What's interesting were the number of people who said that one of the problems in your piece was that you were touting progressivism.
Yeah.
And this idea that sort of Ron Paul is above all of that, all of these labels. Well, he's not a progressive. And it's the fact that you get behind progressivism and conservatism and you accept those labels. And that's the reason why you can't see the genius of Ron Paul. It's like all of his – which they are. It's like all of his supporters are stoned.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, no, man, there's so much more than just progressivism and conservatism. Yeah. You know what? Shut up.
Yeah, right. Their claim is
not
that,
the point is not that he goes, you know, the point is not that I believe a certain way and Ron Paul doesn't accept that because he doesn't sort of buy into my one very clear way of looking at it. It's the stuff that he's espousing, regardless of whether you can pigeonhole it or not, is kind of crap.
Yeah, that's right. By the way, got to take a break. I'm going to have to get used to this. We got a break, and we'll be back right after this.
This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
All right. We are back. The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show. Brought
Welcome
to you
back to K-Crap, the Rock of Phoenix.
97X. Bam! Right. The future of rock and roll.
Come on, hit the pump post.
All right. So we were talking about Ron Paul and progressives before the break. And you know what? I don't want to spend too much time on that because it's right there on the Huffington Post. And you don't read the Huffington Post. And I said basically everything that needs to be said there. And you know what? I'm just not interested in getting into another long thing because we've done, I think, maybe 1,000 different shows about progressive angst regarding the president. And I don't want to do it again because I'm kind of tired of it. I don't know about you, Chaz, but
yeah,
I'm going to make a prediction. I'm going to go out on a limb that says you're tired of it, too.
It's always fun to beat up on certain people, but yeah, I'm good. It gets everyone nowhere. I mean, I watched you and I have talked about this before, and to the new people, you know, my personal theory is that people who get into really, really heated Twitter battles, I mean, look, if you feel a certain way, terrific, but after a while, I'm not saying you don't do it initially, but after a while, you just stop. You're not going to convince anybody. Nope. You know, it just turns into a shouting match. And I kind of feel that way about coming down on the sort of what Bob and I know refer to as sort of self-defeating progressives. It's just not going to get you anywhere to constantly bitch about it. So the hell with it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and what I, you know what, I don't want to go down this road again. Let's just put it this way. I don't hate Glenn Greenwald personally, for example. Glenn Greenwald and I have actually a very cordial email relationship in terms of just, you know, saying, hey, you know what? Not a big deal. I'm not attacking you personally. Don't worry about it. You're good for a very compelling debate. And that's it. You know, I mean, it's fair. I think it's
he called me illiterate.
He did? He called you illiterate, really?
Of course. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, which from what I mean, I didn't know it at the time, but from what I've heard is one of his sort of standard comebacks when you, you know, when you don't, I don't know, when you don't see things his way.
Was this recently he did this?
No, this is like, what, 4 months ago, something like that, 3 months ago. Once again, I made the mistake of sending him something on Twitter. And I wasn't being a jerk about it. I just told him I disagreed with him. And yeah, so, you know.
Well,
I got the snotty, passive-aggressive response from Greenwald, which is pretty much par for the freaking course.
Well, here's something, Chez, that I think everybody can agree about, and that is that Rick Santorum is crazy. Not only, I mean, he won the Iowa caucus and immediately just stepped in a big heap of poop. And so I got the audio here. I don't know if you've heard this yet.
Some of it. Go ahead.
I don't want to make people's lives better by giving them somebody else's money. I want to give them the opportunity to go out and earn the money,
right,
and provide for themselves and their families.
So that was Rick Santorum essentially saying that, you know, black people, they're just all on the dole. And we want to give them, go get a job, black people, and I'll help you. But you know what? Stop taking my money. Not only was that bad, but his excuse after the fact is even worse. It's laughable. He said, I've looked at that quote. In fact, I looked at the video. In fact, I'm pretty confident I didn't say black. I started to say is a word and then sort of changed and it sort of blah, mumbled it and sort of changed my thought. By the way, I didn't bungle that quote at all. That's verbatim. So Rick Santorum said that he didn't say black, that he said blah. That's Rick Santorum. It's the worst excuse ever. Let's listen to the audio again.
I don't want to make people's lives better by giving them somebody else's money.
He didn't say blah. He said black. I want to get blah people.
I'm totally put. The next time, like, somebody asks me for, you know, my race on like a job application or something, I'm totally putting blah.
Blah. Because you're really into like tapioca pudding and Wonder Bread. And
I actually,
you know,
do like tapioca.
Yeah. And you're just a boring guy.
That's right. Yeah. I am. I'm an incredibly boring
guy.
You're
just a blah. I'm just feeling so blah today. I don't want to collect my welfare check.
You and I have talked before. It's about it before. It's the shamelessness. It's the level of, you know what, nobody's going to call me on this. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to look at it and say, wow, that's the biggest bunch of crap I've ever heard.
Yeah.
You know, how can you honestly not cop to what you said? I mean, just, you know, and to try to weasel your way out of it that ridiculously.
Yeah. Well, what that is, that kind of excuse making, and you're exactly right, that kind of excuse making is the wink and a nudge. In the scheme of the Southern strategy, this plays perfectly to the base. Everyone knows. I mean, Rush Limbaugh is on the air every damn day saying this exact thing or this exact sort of thing. And because, you know, the Republican base, the conservative base, eats it up. And so when they go to apologize, they come up with ridiculous excuses like, oh, I didn't say black. I said blah. You know, then of course the entire Republican base goes, oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, and the damage is done and it doesn't matter. I mean, what matters is the first thing you say. Mm-hmm. Going back and correcting it, almost nobody pays attention to that.
Yeah.
You know, that's why Romney was able to get away with that ad where he just flat out lied about what, you know, Obama said. Because he knows that really it doesn't matter.
I mean, do you really think the racist newsletters hurt Ron Paul? Not in the slightest. They helped Ron Paul. I mean, even progressive supporters of Ron Paul were ignoring the racist, or at least saying, you know what, ah, that's bad, but yeah, indefinite detention, drone strikes. You know, it's okay to issue, racist newsletters in your name as long as you're against indefinite detention.
Right. He you know, adheres to my personal beliefs on my pet freaking, you know, my pet issue. So therefore, everything else is okay.
Drove me nuts this week, Chez. Andrew Sullivan, who I really, I enjoy Andrew's blog.
Yep.
And I admire him as a writer. For some reason, he's been off on this this tangent defending Ron Paul. And he made the most ridiculous excuse for racism I think I've ever heard on his blog this week. He said...
What? He's old and he comes from a time when he actually used to own slaves?
That's right. No, he said, you know...
He's from a different time. That's what we used to say about my grandmother.
Exactly. And that's basically what he said. He said,
really?
You know, it's okay. It's okay if, you know, grandma talks about the days when she went to the candy store and bought some N-word toes.
Like the Louis C.K. episode, the yeah. Louis episode.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But he said, Andrew Sullivan said that, you know, Ron Paul's not a bigot. He's just a libertarian. What the hell
well,
does that
okay.
mean?
What the hell does that mean?
you know, it's ridiculous. He's just a libertarian. It's like saying, well, you know, that guy's not a bigot. He's just a Christian.
He's not a bigot. He's just an asshole.
Yeah. Unbelievable. So, you know, but this all this stuff helps these guys, and it's the Southern strategy, and you know, as much as they disavow it and they get all bent out of shape when you call them on it, they're still using it. The Republican Party is still using the Southern strategy. It's all over the place. It's not a thing of the past. It's not like Southern strategy, haha, Lee Atwater 20 years ago and Nixon in the early 70s. This is today. They have not stopped, and they will continue to do it as long as it works. They're playing to a smaller and smaller base, so they need to get louder and louder with these sorts of things. So you can see, at times, it's not even, I think even Newt Gingrich said something that was extraordinarily racist. I forget exactly what it was. We're going to talk about Newt Gingrich later on the show. But again, they're not shy about it, because it works. It just works.
It does work, but you're right. They're appealing to a smaller and smaller core audience. I mean, reality is dooming the Republican Party as it stands now, because you know the makeup of the United States is changing, and that way of thinking that you know white Christian European men control everything, that crap's gone.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not gone yet, but it's fading very quickly. And it eventually will be. And there's just nothing they can do to stop it. This is, you know, it's ugly, but this is really, in a lot of ways, the death throes of that brand of conservatism.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
brand of Republicanism.
That's exactly right. It's the death rattle. It's like the big gasp right before the end.
Yeah, it's desperately trying to cling to something that they quite frankly cannot cling to. They can't cling. It's gone. It's going away. You know, you can try it, you know, like I think you said, you know, put your hands over your ears and sing, nah, 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 you know, not paying attention. Maybe it was Ashby. I don't know. But, you know, you can do that all you want. You can talk about how, you know, you want to go back to the way things used to be in the 1950s. Guess what? You can't.
Yeah.
Screw it. It's not going to happen.
Well, I've got some statistics about who's actually on welfare, and we're going to come back to that in just a minute. We'll be back right after this.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Indeed it is. We are back. The official sponsor of the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show is, of course, BubbleGenius.com. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius. If you're not familiar with them, it's like the gold standard for bath and body products. Produced entirely by liberals, vegan, and it's wholly independent.
I have now visited the lab.
Yeah, you were there. Holy crap.
I was there. I've seen the magic.
And so you got to spend some time with the Bubble Genius ladies, and
Paul and Sarah Rule.
They sent me a gross of my favorite hibiscus soap.
They were telling me that, yeah. Like a million pounds of it or something like that.
It is. It's a gigantic basket.
Truck full.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm really not going to need any hand soap for like, I don't know, 2-3 years. I mean, a single bar of their soap will last about a month and a half. A gross is what, 144 items? Unbelievable. If you're on the market,
where there would be a math test.
If you're buying your soap at one of those big box stores, you're crazy. Support independent liberal businesses by going to BubbleGenius.com. Buy all your bath and body products there. Here now is the the latest word from Bubble Genius.
You can't always get a clean you can feel good about inside and out unless you're using Bubble Genius bath and body products. See, Bubble Genius is a woman-owned small business proudly creating our vegan-friendly products in America and supporting other U.S. businesses by buying our ingredients and supplies from them as often as possible. Plus, you'll be hard-pressed to find packaging as recyclable as ours. Visit BubbleGenius.com and check out our cause-related items, too, like our global warming soap and a lot more. We donate our proceeds for those items to worthy causes, like organizations combating climate change and mountaintop removal mining. Good stuff like that. We also send our products to the troops overseas through our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign. Because the least we can do is keep them smiling and smelling great, right? So visit BubbleGenius.com and feel good and clean. Bubble Genius, doing our part to make the world a better place, one bathtub at a time. That's BubbleGenius.com.
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go.
Do it.
Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Can we say shove Bob and Chez into your pants on the radio?
Probably.
I don't know.
If I had my way, there would be things that, you know, we would be saying much more than that. But that's me.
If you go to Bubble Genius, make sure to enter your promo code, Bob and Chez, BobAndChez, and get 15% off your entire order from Bubble Genius. So here we go. Regarding Rick Santorum and this bit about black people being welfare queens, or I mean, I'm sorry, blah people.
Blah people.
Blah people. I was saying blah people. I didn't mean black people. I meant blah people. Really lame. They're kind of clammy looking.
Yeah.
Those are the people who are on welfare.
That's why they don't. That's why they won't work. No one will hire them because they're just so blah.
They're so blah. But here's the statistics based on population of who's on welfare. This is 2006 totals. Black people, 27.78% on welfare. Hispanic people, 11.47%. White people, 37.8% on welfare. That's
true. And you know that a whole crapload of them bitch about the fact that, you know, that the black people are on welfare, that they're, you know, they're lazy and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. That's the great irony.
That's right. And it's not, we're not playing with numbers here. Yeah, there are way more white people in the United States than black people. We're not, it's not based
exactly
on that.
That's true.
It's a percentage of the total white population. Of all of the white people, 37.8% are on welfare. Of all of the black people, 27.78% are on welfare. In other words, there are more white people as a percentage of the white population on welfare than there are black people on welfare as a percentage of the black population. And only 11.47% of Hispanic people on welfare. So don't tell me that it's just black people on the dole, black welfare queens. These are people who worship Ronald Reagan, so they're going to go back to that same attack from 20 goddamn years ago.
Right. But what that does is, you know, I was kind of wrong to say that there are, you know, that there are a whole lot of white people on welfare who somehow are resentful toward black people being on welfare. I mean, I'm sure there are quite a few, but obviously not all. But that feeds into the reason that Santorum said that is because it feeds into that entitlement and resentment. That the group of white voters, white Republican voters mostly, who say things like, you know what, when I'm sitting at home and collecting unemployment or I'm collecting Medicare or something like that, I'm using it correctly. But, you know, when someone who's black or Hispanic is out collecting it, they're just being lazy. You know, it's that the irony that I know you and I discussed a lot about people who would show up to Tea Party rallies riding their little freaking hover round scooters complaining about, everybody taking their money and how, you know, we need smaller government. Oh, no, but except for me, don't take my Medicare. Don't take the money I'm getting from the government because I'm putting it to good use because I'm entitled to it because I'm, you know, I'm whatever the hell I am, a white Republican.
Yeah. By the way, guess who's on welfare? I mean, welfare. Guess who's on Medicare? Ron Paul. Ron Paul is on Medicare. He's absolutely on Medicare. Mr. Libertarian's accepting Medicare. Yeah. As you know, what I always think of when I think of white welfare is how accurate the that movie, that Clint Eastwood movie, Million Dollar Baby, was. the parents, the mother and the family on Million Dollar Baby, where they were just, you know, I don't want them to take my welfare away. If you give me this house, they're going to take my welfare away. Don't let them do it. And that's the case more often than not. What we're talking about here has no bearing in reality. What we're talking about here is a coordinated strategy, tried and true strategy of the Republican Party to demonize black people so as to congeal white support.
Right.
It was invented years and decades ago.
Yeah. And again, to play on and hone white resentment to a knife edge.
That's right. Well, and white resentment, actually creates some enthusiasm amongst that white. Then the white people go, you know, this. It's as old as time itself. You know, get this one group really, really angry and really, really scared about that other group. I say decades ago. Let's talk about centuries ago. Really, the modern iteration of white racism has everything to do with Reconstruction. And trying to unify the nation around a common enemy. We don't want the Southern white man to be the enemy of the United States anymore. So we're going to create this other enemy. It's going to be black people. That way, Southern white people and Northern white people have a common enemy post-Civil War around this single enemy. And it has not gone away. The Republicans are still doing that. They're not overt about it. They're being clever about it. I said blah people. I mean, Newt Gingrich and to a certain degree, Frank Luntz. And this is a topic we want to get to after the next break. Newt Gingrich being a whiny diaper baby with regards to negative campaigning. But he invented negative campaigning.
But you got to give him credit, though, because I know we don't want to get to this now, but he's going to continue. His entire campaign will now be one of absolute spite. It's just he's using the political system for vengeance. It's great. It's such a beautiful thing. He's such a petty little bastard.
We'll come back with more about Newt Gingrich right after this.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Uh-huh. We're up to the final segment of the show. Oh, my God. Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show. Now on the mighty WPWC 1480 AM, We Act Radio in Washington, D.C. We'll be on Sundays from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time. And you can also listen to... WPWC at weactradio.com. And of course,
do you want to shoot for time and temperature on the radio? What time is it right now? Let's see.
It's 6:54 p.m.
You got to say past the hour so that whenever you air, it's okay.
That's right. You got to do like the DJs do it two different ways. So you do time two different ways simultaneously. So 54 minutes after 6, would it be 6 minutes till 7?
Right. Oh God, I love that.
Chaz, a thunder boomer's not. Hey, I got nonstop traffic out there at the Wilson Bridge. He's bottling up around Springfield, the Franconi Interchange. So I'm going to throw in all of these DC references now that I love.
There it is. Hyper local.
I mean, I went to Woodson High School in Fairfax. Grew up in Annandale. You know, worked at the Domino's Pizza at Kings Park Shopping Center. Worked at the Sam Goody at Springfield Mall. You know, I've been all around there. But it's exciting to finally be back on Washington, D.C. radio. Because I used to work for the Don and Mike show back in 1993, 1994. I was an intern on the Don and Mike show. And then I still listen to the Mike O'Mara show. It was a fantastic podcast, by the way. It's easily the funniest podcast on the inner tubes, the Mike O'Mara show, which is sort of the current version of the Don and Mike show. And, in fact, our official announcer on this show, Buzz Burbank, is also the news guy on the Mike O'Mara show. So there's still a connection there. And, Mike is an institution in D.C. Don has since gone to Sacramento Radio. So Don Geronimo is now in Sacramento. But everyone else from the Don and Mike show is still, you know, technically on the radio. They're on in Iowa, and they're one of the most popular podcasts on iTunes. You go to the podcast section of iTunes, they're like right there at the top. But let's get to Newt Gingrich here. As I said before the break.
Yes, let's, please. Not a day goes by that I don't think that.
I mean, we talk about Newt Gingrich a lot on this show, and you know, he's really, it's so funny to watch this guy who's easily one of the most rabid attack dogs in the Washington, D.C. establishment. Don't let him fool you. He's as much of a D.C. insider as anybody. He is Washington, D.C. In fact, his head is kind of shaped like the District of Columbia. He's really just, he's a creature of that, you know. Everything that's bad in Washington, D.C. is part and parcel due to Newt Gingrich and some of the awful things that he's done over the past 20 years. Now, to hear him complaining about negative campaigning, I mean, he invented it. I mean, he invented modern negative campaign. Him and Frank Luntz are more responsible for negative campaigning than just about anybody. Yet Newt gets on television and starts whining like this.
You know, because I just think politics has become a really nasty, vicious, negative business. And I think it's disgusting. And I think it's dishonest. And I think the people who are running the ads know they're dishonest. And I think a person who will do that to try to get to be president offers you no hope that there'll be any good as president.
So if you're the Republican nominee, no negative ads against Barack Obama?
You don't have to be negative about Barack Obama. Just tell the truth. I mean, these ads are dishonest.
By the way, when he says dishonest, if you remember that news story, when Newt Gingrich was criticizing the Paul Ryan Medicare plan, he said he called it right-wing social engineering. And then a couple days later, after this huge backlash, he sort of backpedaled and walked the whole thing back.
Yep.
And then he said several days later that anyone who uses that comment in a commercial is being dishonest because he's walked it back. So you can't actually use Newt Gingrich's actual words against him because several days later he said, well, I didn't really mean that. Even though he actually really did mean that. So that's what he means when he says dishonest. Using Newt Gingrich's actual words against him is dishonest. You know, let's put it this way. Newt Gingrich wrote a memo in 1996. It was a GOPAC memo. It's called Language, a Key Mechanism of Control. And he wrote this.
Wonderfully Orwellian.
Yeah, and it's completely Orwellian. He came up with a list of words that are used to this day to demonize Democrats and liberals, progressives. Here's some of the words. Abuse of power, anti-flag, anti-family, anti-child, anti-jobs, betray, bizarre, bureaucracy, cheat, coercion, consequences, corrupt, corruption, criminal rights, crisis, cynicism, decay, destroy, destructive, disgrace, and danger, failure or fail, greed, hypocrisy, ideological, incompetent, insecure, insensitive, intolerant, liberal is one of the words, obsolete, pathetic, patronage, pessimistic, radical. That's one that's used quite often these days with regards to the president. You hear it all over right-wing talk radio.
Kenyan anti-colonialist usurper.
That's right. I guess that would have to be the addendum, the revised edition of language.
Those are words they never even thought they'd be able to use. Radical's easy.
Yeah.
You know, we never thought we'd have to be able to say Kenyan. Anti-colonialist usurper.
That's right. Never in 1996.
It's like the name of a death metal band.
Yeah. Shame, sick, stagnation, status quo, taxes, they, them, threatened, traitors. This is a list that was written by Newt Gingrich, who suddenly hates negative campaigning. Urgent, waste, welfare. I mean, we just played a clip of Rick Santorum using welfare. Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum are now in cahoots. Looks like they're going to be teaming up to gang up on Mitt Romney. So it's just, you know, it's hilarious. Just watching these guys just try and wiggle out of the little boxes they've built for themselves. These little meme boxes. where they say, you know, because everything that they say now is constructed to be the opposite of what the president says or what the Democrats say or what progressives say. So it's very easy for them to become trapped into these little rhetorical, you know, meme attacks against the left. And a great example of that is it happened Tuesday night in the Iowa caucus. Rick Santorum decided not to use the teleprompter. It's all the Republicans are, you know, because they were so desperate to come up with something to attack the president about, they went after the president's use of a teleprompter, which
they shot themselves in the foot.
That's exactly right. They shot themselves in the foot.
They've all used teleprompters. Every politician since forever has used a teleprompter.
That's right. Since they were invented. Ronald Reagan.
Since they were invented, right.
And everyone uses a teleprompter. But they couldn't figure out any way to attack the president at the time. This is early 2009, right after the inauguration. They're going to go after the teleprompter, right?
So then they're stuck having to eat their own meme.
Yeah, so exactly. So
wouldn't it be great if they'd said something like, the president breathes too much. And Santorum and Romney get up there and give their acceptance, whatever the hell it is, speeches, their big victory speeches, trying not to breathe.
Yeah. The president, who everyone admits is one of the smartest presidents in all of presidential history, is not allowed to use a teleprompter. So therefore, the Republicans aren't going to use a teleprompter either. And as a result, you get this. This is one of the funniest things I've ever seen on the Colbert Report.
But last night, Romney rewarded his hardworking troops with a rousing, impromptu victory speech.
Oh, beautiful for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain. I guess, does corn qualify as amber waves of grain? Not exactly, but you got the idea.
Oh. No, Jimmy, actually, that speech was from last week. I want last night's heartfelt victory speech.
Oh, beautiful for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain. If corn qualifies as an amber wave of grain.
No, Jim, that's from Thursday, last night, human emotion.
Oh, beautiful for spacious skies.
No, that's from Friday.
Oh, beautiful for spacious skies.
No, that's from Monday. I want last night victory speech, Mitt Romney, moved by the moment.
Oh, beautiful for spacious skies.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Jim. That's enough. I think we'll all remember where we were every time we heard that.
It's like going to a Michael Jackson concert. Everything is scripted down to the last, you know, the most minor detail. He cries at the same time every night.
Yeah.
So did.
Don't think that because Mitt Romney and the Republicans don't use teleprompters that they're not, you know, scripting this stuff. They are. They're just, you know, they're repeating it so often that it becomes committed to memory in their tiny little chiclet brains. And so they end up repeating this stuff over and over. You know, and of course, it's all stump speeches, and stump speeches are all basically the same. But, I mean, you know, you get up at the tail end of the first major vote of the primary season, and you look, I mean, Mitt Romney, did you see Mitt Romney's speech from Tuesday night? It was painful to watch. Right. It was just, he was jittery. He was uncomfortable. And I haven't seen a whole lot of Mitt Romney stump speeches. But this was, he just seemed uncomfortable in his own skin.
Well, no, it's funny. That's exactly what I was going to say. But that's the way he is all the time. Romney is always awkward. He really, you know, the Robo Romney and all those jokes, they really do fit. You know, he doesn't come off like a human being at all. He always seems uncomfortable. Yeah. He, you know, the little things that you and I, that normal human beings do that make us appear human, Romney does none of them. It's really weird to watch. I'm like, I'm going to start watching to see if he blinks.
Well, you know, I think it's also a window into how he's positioning himself. And I don't think he's entirely he's a seasoned politician. He's been doing this for years. So you think he would have a little bit more polish. And I think he normally would. But what he's trying to do is he's trying to pretend as if he's someone he's not. He's trying to pander to the Tea Party. He's trying to pander to the right wing of the party because he knows those are the ones, the activist base of the Republican Party, are the ones who come out on primary day and on caucus day. So right. As a result, that you get Mitt Romney just trying to find his way into this weird skin that he's like this animatronic skeleton, and he's wrapped this rubbery skin around it of, you know, this guy who has this remarkably moderate record as Republicans go, trying to pretend like, you know, I'm with the Tea Party. And you see a lot of Republicans doing that. The misunderstanding that the loudness of the Tea Party isn't quite indicative of the size of the Tea Party and the influence of the Tea Party.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if when he gets the nomination, which he almost certainly will, if he becomes more comfortable and goes, I want to say goes back to being him more, or goes on to being him more. But I don't think even Romney knows who the hell he is. So. But if he, you know, if he sort of drops the pretense of trying to constantly appeal to the most psychotic and sociopathic within the Republican, within the Republican electorate, the Tea Party crazies.
He seems really, when he's talking, he seems nervous. He seems uncomfortable. He seems jittery. And remember, John McCain was kind of a jittery guy on the stump, too. Like he would do all these weird, obnoxious things that were just consequences of his nervousness, his discomfort with being sort of front and center. But Mitt Romney's doing it for a different reason. Mitt Romney's jittery because he's not comfortable in this BS.
Because he's BSing.
Tea Party skin. That's exactly right.
Yep. He's telling a lie and he knows it, and that's why he's constantly twitching.
Yeah, yeah. He's playing a part that he's not entirely comfortable with. It's like high school theater. You know, they cast the one guy because he's friends with the director.
There you go.
He's really out of his depth. Show brought to you officially by BubbleGenius.com. Your products, pure genius, Bubble Genius. The finest bath and body products you'll find anywhere on the internet. And please, for God's sake, support liberal and independent businesses.
You can't always get a clean you can feel good about inside and out unless you're using Bubble Genius Bath and Body Products. See, Bubble Genius is a woman-owned small business proudly creating our vegan-friendly products in America and supporting other U.S. businesses by buying our ingredients and supplies from them as often as possible. Plus, you'll be hard-pressed to find packaging as recyclable as ours. Visit BubbleGenius.com and check out our cause-related items, too, like our global warming soap and a lot more. We donate our proceeds for those items to worthy causes, like organizations combating climate change and mountaintop removal mining. Good stuff like that. We also send our products to the troops overseas through our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign. Because the least we can do is keep them smiling and smelling great, right? So visit BubbleGenius.com and feel good and clean. Bubble Genius. Doing our part to make the world a better place, one bathtub at a time. That's BubbleGenius.com.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Make sure to enter your promo code Bob and Chez, BOBANDCHEZ, and get 15% off your entire order from Bubble Genius. It's a bargain at twice the price. They pass the savings along to you. Now, just as we wrap up the show here, Chez, your post on about CNN's coverage of the Iowa caucus was effing hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, Coop is the only one willing to admit just how crazy that crap is.
Yeah.
The fact that they're there until all hours of the night, they're surrounded by insane technology and pundits, like a pundit from every single corner of the universe. And yeah, it's just silly.
Yeah, it was the same network that gave us holographic reporters during the 2008 election night coverage. I don't know what the hell that social media board was. I mean, Ali Velshi really struggled to explain it. And then Aaron, what was Aaron Burnett?
And by the way, Velshi and I are friends. I like Velshi a lot. He's a
great
guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you can tell that they're all sort of at the mercy of this technology.
Well, you know, and I was saying the same thing about MSNBC. You know, I really don't have any real gripe with most of the hosts. I don't think I've been perfectly clear about my dislike of Martin Bashir. I don't think Martin Bashir has any place on television. But, you know, I like Rachel Maddow. I like Lawrence O'Donnell. On certain days, I even like Chris Matthews. I think what happens is these guys are instructed by, you know, their bosses to only cover the horse race, to do a lot of these nonsensical things out of fear of not seeming, you know, biased. So they're not going to talk about issues. They're not going to get into the weeds of positions and debunking and fact-checking. They're going to stick to the horse race. And so likewise, CNN, those guys, Aaron Burnett and Anderson Cooper and Ali Velshi, were stuck dealing with these graphics that didn't quite work, and these big screens, and she's trying to slide the thing across like an iPhone, and then Ali Velshi and Anderson Cooper are trying to look at this map with all of these little dots that all seem the same color.
Yeah,
as the show's social media,
and Coop just coming right out and saying, "Good Lord, what does any of this crap mean?"
Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely, and we'll see you next week on the show, Chaz. Bye.
See you.